Was ist gut? Ein Podcast des Deutschen Designer Club.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur 74. Folge des DDcast. Mein Name ist Rainer Gerusch. Letzte Woche sprachen wir mit The Joe Craft, einem der führenden Minecrafter, über digitales Bauen, partizipativen Städtebau und Kirchenmusik. Wir haben uns riesig gefreut über das große Interesse an dieser Sendung. Sie begann ja mit einer in dem Spiel Minecraft mit Hilfe von Musikblöcken und einem Sequencer erzeugten Musik. Ein Experiment, das zeigte, wie offen und vielseitig dieses Computerspiel sein kann. Experimentell geht es auch diese Woche weiter mit dem Ex-Designer, Food-Designer, ja, Design-Rebell Marty Guichet aus Barcelona und Berlin. Marty Guichet arbeitet in mehreren Kontexten zugleich. Einerseits für internationale Marken wie Campa, Alessi, Danese, Desigual, Magis oder Vitra. Auf der anderen Seite waren seine Arbeiten Gegenstand von Ausstellungen MoMA, Centre Georges Pompidou, Design Museum London und auch im National Art Center Tokio. Musik. 2001 etablierte er den Begriff Ex-Design, um sich gegen die begrenzten Möglichkeiten des traditionellen Designs zu positionieren. Was es mit diesem Begriff auf sich hat, was er an unseren Seh- und Denkweisen verändern will und wie er die Lebenswelten in Berlin und Barcelona sieht, das hören wir jetzt in dem Gespräch meines Kollegen Georg Christoph Bertsch mit dem sehr aktiven Ex-Designer Marty Guichet.
Yeah, well, today we're talking to Barcelona, and I'm very happy to have Marty Guichet in the line. So how are you, Marty?
Fine, thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's a pleasure for me. I recall a walk together with you at the seaport in Barcelona many years ago. We just walked along the Port Comercial, and this is a memory that I really cherish very much, because it was just like talking to someone who is walking while talking, or just like doing while thinking. So you're doing everything simultaneously. That's what I like about you. So you go back from Berlin to Barcelona and Barcelona to Berlin. What is one city that the other city isn't?
Well, yeah, they are quite similar, but at the same time, completely different. So the first thing is the die Sprache. Die Sprache ist anders und macht, dass Leute kann anders denken. And also the lifestyle is completely different. And of course, Berlin changed a lot during the last 20 years. So this transformation, it's always very challenging and very exciting to follow. Same as probably you remember well when Barcelona transformed before the Olympics. And I think this energy that provoked the transformation of cities are very encouraging and very positive. So, but What's similar and different, a lot of things, I don't know.
Maybe we come back to that later, because I think this Barcelona-Berlin thing is something very specific in your life and also in your work. But what is also very specific is that you kind of started off calling yourself an ex-designer. So I know that you had a certain career before you claimed that term. But why did you change to this term ex-designer? What does it mean to you?
Well, there are different interpretations. Actually, I changed it because when I started by designing food. And this was very uncommon at that time. That was at the mid-90s. And when I did the first exhibit in the Galleria H2O in Barcelona, I got a lot of bad critics on in design, in the design context, because they said that this is not design. And they called me an artist, but I am not an artist. So I decided that the best would be to call me ex-designer. That means I was a designer, but I don't need to work inside the borders of the discipline. So, and this concept of going through the borders of the discipline and working completely free, and also you could say you don't make competition, you play for pleasure. Like if you are an ex-tennis player, you don't make competition anymore. You just play because you like it. And this makes more, it's a different approach. And with this concept, we did a project together with Inga Knolke for a competition in Berlin. And but we didn't win. But it was a concept of putting X before your profession and in that way going through the borders of your profession.
This is something that we've been touching several times here at DDCast, this transformational aspect of thinking what are the borders of design. So where does design start? Where does it stop? What is the system of design and how can you transcend it? And you're saying you were perceived as an artist, but you didn't want to be perceived as an artist. There are many designers who want to be perceived as artists. So this is very interesting, this specific approach here that you say, they saw me as an artist, but I wanted to stay a designer. In order to do so, I had to find a new term, ex-designer. So this,
yeah,
this is...
again, it's complicated, yeah, because the artists, they are now coming more and more into a kind of design field. So they are not anymore doing subjective opinions through his work, but trying to provide solutions for social context or for different contexts. So that's a more designer work. Basically, for me, was the idea that I am mostly occupied with the all day, the alltag. And that is design is the alltag to advance for the alltag, verbessern the and Kunst is mehr über metaphysische Sachen, so mehr und mehr persönliche statements. So and that's why I really don't feel comfortable in the art world. I am a designer, although I don't work in this old school design thinking.
But what I always found super interesting in your case is that you, as you just mentioned, you worked with food, but without being a chef, without being even a cook, just like, but you started dealing with food as a designer, as you also said, together with Inga Knolke, you started there. And but I also know that you are very knowledgeable about cooking. You're a very good friend of Ferran Adrià of El Bulli. I think he was a school friend of yours, wasn't he?
No, not school friend, but I met him maybe 25 years ago and we tried to do something together, but it didn't work. Still, I am in contact with him. But I do believe that gastronomy or creative gastronomy or molecular gastronomy had nothing to do with food design. I think food design is related to design, to the design project, and gastronomy is completely a different thing.
So if you look at, you have been featured in solo shows at the MoMA, the Centre Georges Pompidou, at Design Museum London, National Art Center Tokyo, and Museum für Angewandte Kunst. So you're very kind of famous household name in international design. And but you also have always been working in not only this kind of museum context, but very strongly in commercial contexts, which seems a little bit paradoxical.
Well, not for me. Yeah, it looks paradoxical for the context of business and design, no? But the world of art, which when I first started to exhibit food design, which I exhibit food design because it was the only possibility to make it public, to make it public to the people, no? And then the design world and the gastronomic world were complete against that, but lifestyle and art world were completely open to this kind of new thing. And then I started to use museums or any opportunity to create new work to present kind of new concepts or new ideas that would not be connected to the real, let's say, commercial ambit, but it's more a kind of a research area that I use it, and I did for these different museums. For example, Haibai, which is a concept for traveling and working at the same time that I exhibited in the MoMA, or Food Facility, that it's this first concept in 2005 about the ghost kitchens. And so there are a lot of experimenting projects that became a kind of something that it's before that it happens, so a kind of prophecy. And the commercial work, of course, in the 90s, it was like much more much more open. So it was possible to do much more experimental work in retail, also in products. Now, since maybe 10 years, it went everything very conservative and a little bit back. So I think it will come again more progressive. But mostly it's because a lot of brands, they are not anymore owned by personalities, but they are owned by investment funds, and they don't want to risk anything. So they go to secure things. So it's a pity, because there is a lot of new concepts to implement in because it's changing continuously and now very radical. So it could be done completely new ways of interior spaces. Interior design, it's completely going very, 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 it's like growing a lot in importance. If I remember from my time as I was studying till now. And I like very much to combine experimental work with commercial work.
This was especially the case because you have been working for Alessi and for Vitra and Danese. But I think for me, the most impressive work was for Campa. We just mentioned this was a very experimental approach in retail and shop design, where these shops didn't look like shops anymore. How did this come to life? Did they ask you to really revolutionize their shop design, or did they just hire you and you said, we must do everything different? So this is for designers, it's always a question, how do you get a situation where this is possible?
It was a coincidence. I was through Fernando Amat from Binson. I was introduced to the owner of Camper, and at that time they wanted to expand internationally, and then I just I was together in this expansion. And because they didn't want to invest in, at that time they were a small company, they didn't want to invest in advertising, in classical advertising. So they asked me to do strong conceptual shops to be strong enough to be in the media without doing the advertising. So in that way, I was pushed to go to the limits of being experimental in shops. And it's true that it was a incredible advanced work that it was done for Camper, and I was content a lot. So they didn't allow me to go more free. So a lot of times they say no. And it's for example, we did in 2000, at the beginning of 2000, the first pop-up shop in the story of retail in Via Monte Napoleone, which is completely, before that time, it didn't exist, the concept of pop-up. So with Camper, we invented pop-up through a series of casualties through this project, and that they decided that we should do a temporary shop.
I think for those who are not initiated into the world of art, I think I should add that Via Monte Napoleone in Milan is something like the epicenter of international fashion. So this is the place where things happen. And so the decision to go there and to compete in a way with Prada and Versace is already something. So you say you go there as a shoemaker, I would say, and do something completely freaked out.
Yeah. No, it was really a series of consequences from the situation. And then I was asked to do a shop in a weekend. So I did a very radical shop, which is based in an instruction. And then I just went there. I don't know if I have the time to explain to you the project.
Yeah, I would like to hear a little bit more about it in detail. So what did it look like? And when you just said it, you did it in a weekend, more or less, where other interior designers work for years to set something up which is iconic.
So the thing is that they ask Shiro Miura, which is a Japanese architect who works for in a sustainable way and very conscious, to design the shop, but he needed at least 4 months to do this shop. So they said, we cannot stay 4 months with this space in Via Monte Napoleone, close it, you know, because probably the rent is very expensive. And so they asked me in a very urgent way, and kind of hysterical way, in a Friday night, please, can you think in something very Camper, very fast, that it has to be for only 2 months, and then we have to take it away. And then I was doing this concept, which is you build. So the thing is that I thought you have to build the furniture with the shoe boxes, because it's the thing you have and you transport with the boxes. And then let's do that. To make evident that time goes by and this temporality, let's make that the people can leave a small graffiti in the walls. Mm-hmm. So during 2 months, it will be more red and red, and then when it's completely red, it will be the new shop. And because it was a very hysterical situation, like the Camper art director, Guillem Ferré, the owner of Camper, the architect from Tokyo, Shiro Miura, the architects from Milan who should do. Everything was like chaotic. So what I did is, I thought it's similar to an air crash. When you have an air crash, you have 150 people that they have to do a very precise instruction to go out from the airplane in a hysterical situation. And this is regulated by a safety card. So what I did is a safety card that's called Camper Temporary Shop in the site A, stays how to do the space. So you just clean it, you paint it, and nothing more. And in the B site, in the reverse, you have instructions on how to build the furniture. So I took the plane the next week, and I went to Milano. And just I thought, I do like the hostesses in the airplanes, and I explained that to the architects, and they do what they want. So I went there with a card, and I say, okay, you do this for the space, and in the other side, you do that for the furniture, and I say, okay, bye. And then they did the shop in, I have to say, in a very good way, maybe too good for what I was expecting, because they were a very good person. And the shop was opening, in they were a little bit like a tension, because it's graffiti, Via Monte Napoleone, as you say, in front of Via Monte Napoleone is Gucci. And from the first day was completely successful, and it became the more successful shop in the camper at that time in the whole world. So selling a lot of shoes, and it's a shop that cost zero mostly, because it was like a temporary. It didn't exist the name Pop-Up, so we call it temporary. And then after that, it was opening one in Rome, and also it was one in Berlin, and there were a lot of shops all over the world with this concept. And the system is interesting, because in the way that you do the graffitis, it's different in every city. For example, in Milan, the graffitis were small, people leaving tags in the, like saying hello from Rome and blah, blah. In Berlin, for example, the graffitis were complete against consumerism, very big, very political statements. In Paris, there were a lot of graphics, very big. So a generic system made the shop completely individual in every place of the world. And the second thing is that the implementation of the shop was done for different companies, and the interpretation was also completely different. So in France, it was done with a company doing both in and the shop was looking completely different. So that for me was completely interesting concept, very easy and very successful in terms of, for the company, in terms of time and economy.
But what I think what's so interesting there is that everything that you describe can be attributed to what we today call social design, the interactivity, the participatory approach, the interaction, without being social design. It could also be attributed to Ezio Manzini with Design for Social Innovation, or Mariana Amatullo. But it comes from a commercial context. So do you work with the term social design in your work, or do you also try to cut off the connections here as you do in the art on the other side in the art?
No, I am more, okay, there is Ezio Mazzini and Luciano Crespi, that they are both working with a process, but Ezio is more that the process is the goal, and Luciano Crespi is for the result is the thing. So it's not that the process is important, but it has to be a result. But I am more in this, which is something that created anthropologist Octavi Rofes from Barcelona, which is called Design Without Project, which is a kind of idea of eliminating the project from the design. So the project consists in you have a commission and you end with a payment of the commission. So when you eliminate that, it's like a kind of, you just design in any context, in any way, in any process. And this is quite interesting and something that I feel very comfortable with that. In a way, it would be like, in music, it's called improvisation. So you don't have a song, you don't have a partiture. You just have your skills, and then you just play design. And I did several projects with this concept of design with a project. One was the layout of an exhibit in the Museo di Arte di Trento e Rovereto about the war. And that was very interesting, because we were just improvisating the layout, reusing the things that they were from the exhibition before. And that was completely easy to do and completely successful, the result. So I think in this Design Without Project, I feel very, very good.
So what is very important for me, if you look at your work, is that you're an object designer, but you're also drawing a lot. And it seems that words are just as important as these drawings. So it's a kind of an integrative approach of writing and drawing. So what role does writing or words play in your work?
Well, I don't know, but it's probably one of the interferences that did this learning German. I am fascinating from this German language, which in a way it's kind of very structured. And sometimes I do this exercise that if I don't know a word, I try to think how this thing could be the name for that. And in sometimes it makes a lot of logic, no? And this idea of building or designing words, it's more and more fascinating to me.
It's also something like titles, as you, one of those shows was called Fish Futures, which in the very first moment sounds like something like from John Cage maybe, or Christian Morgenstern, or Joachim Ringelnatz, also from poetry in a way. But this Fish Futures, how did this come into life? What was the idea behind it? Because I always remember this word, and I don't really can explain it. If someone would ask me what does Fish Futures mean, I wouldn't know what to say.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's for the future of the fishes, because it was like a kind of the design of new futuristic things for fishes, for aquariums.
This what you just said about this design without project, I think this is something very interesting, not only for us now in this conversation, but also for our listeners, that you can start things without having a contract. Just start doing, and by doing so, you create a social situation which causes some, let's say, commerciality, or causes money flow or whatever. So this is a, because we always discuss this, and I will also have one of our next conversations will be about founding a design studio out of nothing. So in this case, with the Design Without Project, you don't need anything but yourself. Isn't it so?
Well, no, but you need skills, eh? Because I cannot play any instrument, but if I am trying to make improvisation in piano, it will be a disaster. So you have to be a good designer to do Design Without Project, of course.
What I also find very interesting is that you say that design is a kind of a platform for questioning and visualizing and influencing behavior. So design not as a tool only, but also as a kind of a platform on which things are happening. So how can we understand this idea of design? So what is this about?
Yeah, I did this interior design in the 80s here in Barcelona. And you remember the 80s in Barcelona were completely crazy, postmodern. And then after my studio of interior design, I went to Italy and I did the industrial design. And that was a school completely classic. We did only projects for social purposes, no? For the school, a chair the chair that we designed was not a chair for bars or restaurants, was a chair for children. They are growing. And then we did, an helicopter, the interior of an helicopter for transporting, people with an accident or with injuries. So everything was kind of, social. So I thought, I still believe, as Vicenç Altaió from Barcelona, they call the la revolució sense dolor, la revolució sin dolor, this idea of changing small things from the quotidien to change your life. So, and that it's a kind of revolution that it's kind of pain-free. So it has to change the things without any violence or any trauma. And still, I think, I learned that design is for change the world in a better way. So, and that's why I am a designer. And but it seems that a lot of people think that it's different, no? And that's the thing. That probably depends on your ideology.
To wind up, or let's say before we, I will also ask you this question: what is good? Because this is a general question that we always ask our guests: what is good? But before that, I would, because you know Barcelona and Berlin very well. So what are, let's say, your favorite atmospheres? Not the places, but the favorite atmospheres in both cities. It might be related to places. So if you think about Berlin, the atmosphere in Berlin that you enjoy very much or most, or in Barcelona. So this is, I mean, you can compare it. You are really traveling back and forth all the time.
I have two visions, no? The vision of 20 years ago from the city, when I was 25, 30, that I was living the cities very much. And the vision now that I am plus 50 and it's influencing also my view, but the cities changed it a lot, no? So when I went to Berlin in the first time in 89, after the war, so I never saw Berlin with a wall. Mm. And I went to live there in 93 because I was very interested in contracultura and alternative culture. And probably because at that time Barcelona was completely like postmodern, and everything was like super high and super sophisticated. And Berlin was still very, let's say, authentic in a way. And but it changed a lot, no? Berlin, it became completely cosmopolitan and full of artists, which I appreciate a lot. And it's completely incredible, the change, no? It's full of people. I always used to say 20 years ago, it's so empty, Berlin. And they say, yeah, it's so big that you don't see the people. But it's not true. Now it's really full. At that time, it was empty. And Barcelona now it's changing absolutely. I don't know. It's very strange because it fascinates me a lot, but at the same time I am a little bit skeptic. And sometimes it reminds me that when I go through the city with all these people and everything, it's chaotic and completely out of the norm and everything. I see sometimes the underground comics of the 80s, when, you know, like these comics from the future, like, or you say, okay, or Moebius or Liberatore, this cyberpunk idea of a city from the 80s, I can see it now in Barcelona in real. Mm-hmm. So, and this is a little bit strange. I don't know. I think, it's so in 10 years I will see the future of the comics of the 90s probably.
The return of Makoki, something like that.
Yeah, maybe. No, maybe Makoki, no, I'm it's more cyberpunk.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
The future, no, that you saw in the 80s, the future was the streets full of people dressed in strange and full of mobility, like strange things moving. And this is now Barcelona. But also, in a way, Berlin still, there is a lot of cars.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. There's a big difference. That's true. It's a very interesting observation. So let's finish with this general question. Simple question. What is good?
Well, I don't know what's good. Good is what it's good for you.
Okay, that's an answer. So I would, what I like about our conversation, this conversation is good, and it's always a very long time that you haven't talked, and I appreciate very much your reflections on time as you compare Berlin and Barcelona in this time period of these 20 years. I think this is very very inspiring. I think what is the process within time? Because you usually in design, we often don't talk about time. We think there's an object and it's kind of eternal. It's there. Once designed, it's there. But time plays an incredible role. And also, as you explained, the role of time in your camper shop in Via Monte Napoleone, where also the project came to life through time.
Yeah, it seems time is the thing, the good thing.
Good. So let's hope for a good time for also 22.
It can't be that we are in a time out of joint. Huh?
Well, I don't know. What are you expecting for this year? I mean, you just said that you are going to do kind of Instagram posts every day.
I am doing this 25 years food design, a little bit to just a kind of a small story about the whole thing. Because, of course, food design now, it's completely, it's a discipline. I am teaching it in Milano since 10 years, this food design. So, and there is a lot of food designers now all over the world, although they are not in the way I think food design. But in any case, it's a kind of a movement, no, food design. And I don't know what will happen this year. The thing is that since COVID, I am traveling less because I was the way my life was organized was 33.3% Berlin, 33.3% Barcelona, and 33.3% traveling all over the world. And now this traveling all over the world, it's not possible. And so it's like a different approach to everything. I think it's very challenging because it's changing everything. And probably design has to play a big role, and food design more, because there is a lot of things in gastronomy or in industrial food that they are obsolete. And the project of design applied to edible objects, it's completely necessary.
So, well, this would be another conversation only about food design, but we just leave it where we are. And so thank you very much for having joined us today. It was a great conversation, and hopefully we meet each other soon.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. See you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Das war Marty Guichet, der mit seiner Position zwischen Mode, Produktgestaltung und Interaktion eine einzigartige Position einnimmt. Nicht zuletzt auch durch sein Food Design, das nun wirklich nichts mit Kochen zu tun hat. Nächste Woche aber geht es ernsthaft ums Kochen und um Transformation vom Feinsten. Um das vegane Kochen, nämlich auf allerhöchstem Niveau. Wir reden mit Ricky Savate, der mit seinem Restaurant Seven Swans als erster Koch der Welt einen der begehrten Michelin-Sterne für ein rein veganes Restaurant ergattert hat. Ricky ist Anfang 30 und gilt bereits als globale Referenz für eine radikal regionale und konsequent vegane Küche. Wir wünschen allen Designern und Ex-Designern, Hörern und Ex-Hörern und überhaupt allen Kreativen und Ex-Kreativen eine wunderbare, von allen Konventionen befreite Schaffenswoche. Und das ist das Wichtigste dabei, bleibt vor allem gesund. Eure DDcast-Redaktion.